Well, hello there, HW here, and thank you so much for watching episode 12, listening to episode 12 of the Tone Junkie podcast. Also, there's a special video edition, so some of you are watching on YouTube, on Facebook, on IGTV, maybe on my Instagram story if I chop this into like 1,000 15-second clips, but probably not. If you don't know me, my name is HW, and I make a plethora of guitar content. I'm really into the Kemper. I make some incredible Kemper profiles, and I have a thing for this beautiful floral hat, and I recently found a shirt that matched. Funny story, I ran into a guy at Guitar Center, and I saw, a lot of you have seen the Tone Junkie hat, the floral print hat with the black baseball cap style kind of hat piece on there, but the bill is all floral. It's got the logo. I ran into a guy that had the same floral print on a shirt, and I chased him down, and I made him let me look at his tag so I could go find it on the internet, and I did. So I completely floraled out. I'm ready for my Hawaiian vacation coming up. I'm ready for the hot weather of summer. California native, so floral and me are pretty good. Okay, you've already seen the title of today's podcast. Are Elliott guitars worth it? Some of you just threw something. You threw your iPhone. You just yelled, "No!" Some of you just yelled, "Yes!" Some of you just, I don't know. You've already switched off, and so I'm not going to speak to you. Are Elliott guitars worth the money? I've been criticized before about not giving my opinion early enough in these types of videos and just talking in circles for a while, sort of talking around the bush. But that's what I do. I'm a thinker. The point of this podcast and of a lot of the Tone Junkie content is not for me to assert my belief on you. So the question of does HW think it's worth it is a little bit different than is it worth it? Is it worth it is a thought experiment. To look at the marketplace, to look at alternatives, to look at everything else you could buy, to look at how much something costs, to look at the utility of it, to look at the storytelling, to look at the romance, the emotional value of it. Do I think it's worth it? Hell yeah, I do. Man, these things are really freaking awesome. they really are, and I wouldn't have said that before I got my hands on a bunch of them at NAMM. Because I'm skeptical of brands that have a lot of hype. I'm very skeptical, and I'm not going to say this brand has a lot of hype or something in a negative way, but it's a very talked about line of guitars in the praise and worship circle. It's a very spoken about. It has some very spoken about endorsees, right? All these praise and worship guys, myself included. I mean, I'm a praise and worship guy. I don't really agree with this next guy. They all have this man crush on James Duke. I think it's that he's like the strong, silent type, whereas Kundi is like a little more of the like, I don't know, a little uncomfortable in front of a camera maybe. But Duke seems like he has the punchline to a joke and he's just not telling it to you, but he finds it moderately humorous. That's James Duke. I'll tell you a funny James Duke story too. James Duke lives in, he's around the Nashville area. I know that. I don't know exactly where he lives, but I live in Franklin. And I've seen James Duke several times running around and, having this channel and having this podcast, I get recognized in public sometimes, mostly at Kemper events or at NAMM or something, but or like a church conference, we've been recognized and stuff. It's par for the course. It happens every now and then. If you're a Kemper guy, a lot of times you've run into the content. You know who I am and you know who we are. But I saw James Duke. He's walking down. He's walking out right outside my office, downtown Franklin. And he's coming out of the Starbucks and he points towards me. And the first thing that goes in my head is he watches the videos. He listens to the podcast. And so I'm right about to give my signature. Well, hello there. My name is HW, and thank you. And right before I say that, the point sort of that's pointing at me, the angle just shifts a little bit to the side. And that is the moment I realize, and I look behind me. There's someone behind me, and apparently he knew this guy. I later crossed the street and I walked in front of what was the Franklin Theater and I saw Stu G and I saw a bunch of people I know from Integrity Music and stuff. And then I realized, oh, there's just an event going on literally across the street from where I'm standing. And that's why all these people are here. Anyway, almost embarrassed myself in front of the Duke, but Alas, I did not. Okay, to LA Guitars. Look, I'm skeptical sometimes when I see things with a lot of hype, a lot of praise, and with a big price tag, because I know what that means. It means very few people actually own them and have played them, and yet opinions are plentiful. When there's more opinions out there on a guitar manufacturer than there are actual guitars floating around, or people who have even played them and own them, oh man, that's when everything gets distorted. Case in point, is anyone have a Chase Bliss Brothers on their board anymore? I know some people are going to, and in the comments, you're going to jump in there and just go, oh, I still love the Chase Bliss Brothers. But man, for me, talk about a pedal that was lots of hype and didn't really back it up that much. You know, it just, I don't know. For all the hype it got, you would have thought it was literally changing the world, that this pedal could make toast and feed the world. And it's actually very hard to find sounds in that pedal that were fairly even usable on both sides. You know, it was like, a lot of people would be like, oh, I like two modes of one side. Well, then what the heck's the other side for? Anyway, forget all that. LA Guitars, I walk up to NAMM, and my buddy E, who I know, you know, he's not like in my wedding kind of buddy. But we're friends. We're friends on Facebook and stuff. And we've chatted a bit about guitars, about Kemper stuff. My buddy E is involved with the company there. And he's also a music director, I suppose that's his title, music director at Elevation Church. And he plays this beautiful, beautiful red Elliott Tone Master. If you saw here's a picture of E. If you see E and that guitar, you're going to know instantly. You kind of know him. I feel like people recognize that guitar, and he shared this with me. He said people almost recognize his guitar before they recognize me. Oh, you're the guy with the red Elliott, you know. And fun fact, that guitar was made for the Red Tour, and the color red was made to match that. I believe it might be the only red Tone Master like that. Although they did at the booth have a Strat I didn't see them right next to each other, but it was probably a similar red. But I approached the booth and. Look, this is a smaller company. They have a lot of instruments on the walls. But you got to understand, for a company the size of Elliott to be displaying 15, 20 instruments, this is not like they just have 20 instruments lying around that they just keep in cases and these are the NAMM guitars. I mean, these are people's guitars. Or these are guitars probably ready to go out, you know? Or like, this is a guitar we should have shipped last week, you know? So it's not like, hey, have your way, free for all, just run around with them. You know, so you got to be careful here. Treat them nice, respectfully. These aren't $500 Fenders. These aren't even $1,000 Fenders. These are $6,000 handcrafted instruments. You know, and the guys who make them are there. Now, I walked up and I told Andy this, and I said, you know, I wonder, I get this question a lot, is it worth it? Are your guitars worth it? And I told him I really appreciated being able to handle a lot of these guitars and play them. The new amplifiers they're putting out are just they were the best thing I heard at NAMM by far. They were the best thing I heard at NAMM. And they had a Kemper at their booth, so it gave a really nice opportunity to put on some headphones and drown out the other noise. But I played the two amps in stereo through E's board, and it was beautiful. It was a beautiful sound. They're like Tremolux style circuit. There's some I have played, profiled, handled lots and lots of amps, much more than your average bear. And really expensive, nice stuff. Fender, Vox, Marshall, Bad Cat, Matchless, Sur, anybody I'm forgetting, just all sort of Tone King, Benson, Milkman. I've played all the stuff. I've played it all. It's great. Victoria, old Fenders, Trainwreck. You can hear when an amp is special. This amp was rich and clear and beautiful. Beautiful. I don't know if it had low negative feedback or something. That sometimes I find it gives things a very pristine sound or what, but it didn't feel like it had very low negative feedback because it was semi-forgiving. I didn't feel like I was naked playing it, but it had a beautiful reverb and vibrato and stuff. It felt like an amp that would be challenging because it was so great sounding and you could hear the guitar through it. but not one that was too unfree. I mean, it was just toneful. It was just toneful. You know, you get things that are very compressed sometimes, and it just doesn't really... I mean, it's low wattage, so it would compress, but I didn't have it very loud. But it was a beautiful amp. Let me just say that. I'm very excited to see these things get out into the wild, and I hope they're very successful with this line. But picking up the guitars, I noticed a couple things. I said, look, E, tell me about this thing. And first of all, I put it in my hands, and I immediately felt very comfortable on this neck. I can't say it was a neck that reminded me of something else, like, oh, this is just like my 60 Fender or something. Nothing like that, but just incredibly comfortable. Nothing too wide, too thin, just a very comfortable guitar, and the setup was obviously perfect. One of the things I look for in guitars often is I find that on cheaper instruments or instruments that just don't have pickups that I really like, sometimes the bridges are too harsh. This can be especially true on JM style guitars. I'm not a huge fan of the sort of really period, vintage, correct, true JM pickups. I think they're a little too weak. I like P90s, but I like something even maybe a little bit in between. I would describe these things as having some power behind them. But one of the things I look for, because I think really great guitars do this, bridge pickups are not supposed to be a lot brighter than the rest of your guitar. And some of you are like scratching your head. Yes, they are. Not really. Like, hear what I'm saying. When you move that microphone, that's what a pickup is. When you move that microphone back and forth towards the neck and towards the bridge, the tonality should change. And you're going to have some increase in treble. But there are some bridge pickups that on the neck, they sound too bassy. And they're warm, and you might like that. You know, you EQ the amp for that. You go to the middle, and this is where you can really tell. The middle position of a two-pickup guitar, humbucker or P90, should have a level of high-end presence, a clarity about it, sort of the higher-end present frequencies, that should not increase so greatly when you slam to the bridge that you have to re-EQ the amp. I've played so many fabulous guitars that are, the pickups are well balanced enough that the sort of the amount of presence in that middle position, when you switch to the bridge, it may increase, but not so much that you are now on a very different sounding thing. What should increase is sort of the steely quality, the snarliness, the sort of sound of that bridge, that metally bridge sound that we all know. But just the high-end presence, if it increases too much, it can instantly become too shrill. And what it means is that some guitars, you really, it's almost impossible to balance one sound in a guitar. And what you end up having to do is go, oh, this pedal, it sounds good for the neck pickup. I don't want that. I want a pedal and an amp that sound good for all the pickups. And I want to be able to use my guitar and have all these usable settings. I can honestly tell you that when I first hit a chord, I was very impressed because I immediately felt that quality about the Tone Master. Now, my only gripe with this particular Tone Master that I play was that it didn't have a trem, and I'm a trem guy. And I didn't even know they made Tone Masters with trems because for some reason I hadn't seen it. I've seen trems on other model guitars that Elliot makes, but not on the Tone Master. But I saw one there. And that really gets me thinking. If I were a betting man, and I am, ask my wife or anyone I've gone to Vegas with. If I were a betting man, I bet that HW gets a Tone Master here in the not-so-distant future. Because I don't see a way around it. These things are beautiful. I love how there was such this really, really a fine attention to detail. And I noticed, one of the gentlemen pointed out to me, he said, you notice how the neck's not sticky, but it's gloss. And as soon as he said that, I said, you're right. And I looked at the back of the headstock, and it was super glossy. You can see this now. There's a super glossiness in the headstock and in the finish. You'd think that would make a very sticky neck, but then the gloss on the neck is just slightly less. It's less gloss on the neck. It's not matte on the neck. It's not sanded down. But it's just finished differently. You can see that in the light if you look closely at these guitars. that attention to detail to go, I want this really cherry new look, but I also need the playability. I know what gloss can do. It can get sticky. But these necks were not sticky at all. They were not sticky at all. They sounded tremendous. Just these beautiful, beautiful ringing chords. And you could feel the body sort of vibrate. Now, is a $4,000 ToneMaster, a $5,000 ToneMaster worth the money when you think of other guitars that are out there? Like I said earlier, I'm a big fan of Sur guitars, and so I'm a big fan of their JM style, JM Pro, and it's quite a bit cheaper. I love that guitar, and I particularly have grown quite fond of that neck on that guitar. But it's instantly identifiable, the craftsmanship on the Elliott is greater. You can instantly feel it when you are holding this thing, that the fit and finish is something far greater than I'm getting on a $2,000 Sur guitar. As much as I love them, as much as I love those guitars, the ToneMaster was absolutely an elevated sort of amount of care had gone into this guitar. The fit and finish was perfect. I rubbed my hand slowly on every fret end, not a sharp one. The fretboard I loved. I didn't feel it was like not, I mean, the roll was fine. The shape of the neck was fine. It didn't hit me as anything. It wasn't 50 style. It wasn't 60 style. It wasn't like an exaggerated version of anything. It was just this very comfortable thing that filled my hand. I have fairly large hands here. And so I don't like necks that are too small, but they really, really did sound tremendous. Now that was the ToneMaster. I also at one point played the Duke model. Now, this is an interesting one because I had heard before somebody tell me that those weren't real gold foil pickups. They were just humbuckers made to look like it. But that's not true. They actually are constructed technically like a gold foil. I mean, it's a gold foil pickup that they're making. And it sounded very interesting. It was warmer than I thought. I don't know, for some reason you look at like a metallic-y looking little single coil and you might think very bright, very harsh, but it delivers the goods. I mean, if you think about a James Duke playing that and like a Matchless Chieftain, right? I think that or a Club. I think he plays some different amps. But he has a healthy amount of mid-range in his tone. And I can see why on his signature model, these pickups would help him get there. These are really beautiful guitars. I think one thing I could say about both the James Duke signature model and also the 357 is a James Duke model, and also the ToneMaster, they look classic enough but boutique enough that for me it really hits on, wow, that's a beautiful instrument. Obviously there's Strats and Tellys too that Elliott puts out that are a little more traditional looking, you know. They're not reinventing the world or reinventing the wheel, you know, with a Telly, but they're great crafted stuff. I actually didn't play any of the Tellys there, and looking back, that was my mistake. But they had some really, really great stuff. You know, analyzing it compared to other things in the market, there are other guitars out there, the TMG, Veritas, Elliott, that sort of sit in this, I don't want to pigeonhole anybody too much, but they're very popular in P&W circles. Not that they're only P&W guitars, but they're very popular there. And, you know, they go for a lot of money, and it begs the question, you know, is it worth it? $2,000 to $4,000, $3,000 to $5,000. Obviously there's diminishing returns, but when I hold an Elliott, I feel like I'm holding a guitar that I can keep forever. I don't feel that way about all guitars. Now, some of you know, I really love my Gold Sparkle Strat because I literally went to a Fender event and I met the builder and I spoke with them and they sold me on all these sorts of things that were really, really beautiful. Just to recap those, they explained to me how the finish is applied just like they did in the 50s. They explained to me that the stamped metal pieces on the Fender Custom Shop stuff is... can actually be forensically matched back to the earliest Strats and Tellys because they're using the same presses. They explained to me how these pickups are hand-wound, you know, And so they're like snowflakes. No two are alike. And each set of pickups is like a snowfall. They start different. They stop different. They come at a different time. They're all unique. No day is alike. No person, no snowflake, no pickup. When you do it that way. I have a similar experience in the romance of it when I pick up an Elliot. It feels like substantial. It feels like one thing in a way. It doesn't feel like parts of a guitar. It feels like a guitar. That's what I mean by being greater than the sum of its parts. They felt like instruments. They felt like a real, like love was in it. Like love was really in it. What do I mean by that? I mean, I grew up in San Francisco. I lived there for 30 years before I moved to Nashville. And for those of you who don't know, I remember when the coffee scene was starting. I remember when Starbucks was getting big and started to open a lot of places. When Starbucks moved down the coast of San Francisco, so this is before a lot of people even had Starbucks across the country and stuff. Once they had gotten big, there was one company who sort of started the Blue Bottle, Four Barrel, sort of craft coffee, the bespoke, you know, high quality coffee thing. And it was called Phil's. You had Starbucks, you had Pete's, which wasn't doing as much, kind of the Burger King of the coffee world. And then you had Phil's coffee. Phil's coffee was so good. You'd go to Phil's coffee and you could tell these people it wasn't coffee. It was community. This coffee was everything to them. And I remember watching the barista. And I got a cup of coffee. I was a young man. I got a cup of coffee. I wasn't really that into coffee. I'm still really not. I got a cup of coffee. I mean, I like coffee, but, you know. I got a cup of coffee and I take a sip and I remember how he stood there. He stood there making the next drink, but he watched you take the first sip. And then he said to me, "How is that?" And I said, "That's good coffee." And he said to me, he said this to me and it's always stuck with me because it to me, see, brands live in the mind. What is a brand? A brand is your name. A brand is what you, the stamp you put on, it's a company's face. And what is a brand? Where do brands live? Where is a brand? Like, where is it? Brands live in the mind of the consumer. A brand, really, what is a brand? The brand is when I see whatever that physical marking is, whatever that shape is, the brand is my perception, the thoughts and the perception I have in my mind, in my feelings, and in my head. After I see that mark, after I literally see a picture of the brand, what the brand is, it's the feeling. It's the perception. The brands live in the customer's mind. And I always remember this because this, for me, solidified the Phil's coffee brand because he looked at me and I said, "Yeah, how's that coffee?" I said, "It's good coffee." He said, "That's not a cup of coffee, brother. That's a cup of love." He said that to me as he took small scissors and snipped fresh mint off of a plant and put it in the coffee and set, and then he looked up. He said a person's name. He said the guy's name. He looked up, said the guy's name and looked for him, made eye contact and said, "Thank you." It was a brand for me at that moment that not only meant good coffee, but it meant care and love and a sort of humanity in the way that he looked across the counter. He was taking the time to speak to me, make sure my coffee was great. He wasn't waiting for a mistake. And then he didn't just call a name out and move it to the side and then start working on the next coffee like every barista does today. He looked at the next person, made eye contact, connected with them as a person. That's this brand to me in a way. Because I had the opportunity to be able to connect with and just speak with them, just one-on-one. Oh, you're the hands that do it. You're the hands that do it. It's not Faceless. It's not Fender. It's Elliot. It's literally a guy's name. What I loved about him too was I said to him, so if I want to order one of these, like I can do any color, blah, blah, blah. And the answer I got, I could tell, was the answer of a real artist. Because the answer was, I won't do anything. I'm not willing to put my name on anything. And I get it. I've met a lot of people. Let me tell you this. In California, we were a lot more fashion forward. And I always say this, in LA, there's more money than talent. In Nashville, there's a lot more talent than money. The people out here are so talented in Nashville and a lot of times have such a hard time putting it together, putting the whole career together. But in LA, a lot of times it's so much fluff, so much, everyone's just, a lot of people are faking it in LA. I don't mean the musicians, I just mean a lot of people. LA is more money than talent. Nashville is a lot more talent than money. But since moving to the Southeast, the American Southeast, I will tell you, I've met some wealthy people who have way more money than taste. And so I actually greatly respect a guitar builder who says, I won't do anything. Because I've seen the people, I've seen it in their home decor, I've seen it in a lot of things. Some people's house you go to and you go, gosh, how much money you make? You think you could buy some style? like, you know, legit, right? Legit. There's an artist here and there's love. It's a very principled stance, actually. Now, you may be like, oh, come on, what does he know better than everybody? No, but if someone says, I want a lime green guitar with a pink headstock, maybe you're just like, you know what, I'm not about that. That's not what I do. There are people who would do that, but I'm putting my name on these guitars. And so I very much respect a person because it speaks loudly to the care, the concern, and the love that Andy has for these instruments. See, if he didn't care, he'd do whatever. Yeah, just give me the money, whatever, I don't care. If he didn't love them, the designs, if he wasn't committed to them, see, a part of him must be in there. A part of everyone at that company has to be in the guitars because to care that much that you'd say, look, I know you'll pay me $6,000. I know you'll pay me $7,000. I know you'll pay me $5,000. But I don't want to do that. Saying that, knowing that a customer will go somewhere else, in a business that I don't know anything about the numbers, but in a business that I imagine, there's a lot of labor that goes into making these guitars. There's a lot of hand labor, and the parts are expensive. These are not cheap mass-produced parts, and there's not economy of scale going on. So I can't imagine. These are great guitars, and the company appears to be successful. You know, there's not an 80-foot yacht sitting behind the Elliott building. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying for someone to say, it's a principled stance. What I'm trying to say is I respect the hell out of that. I really do. I respect that big time. Big time. And that amount of love, that amount of concern, and that amount of care, you can feel it when you hold an Elliott guitar. The setups are perfect. That slight attention to detail. The tuners are locking. And what I love is they look completely vintage. They just lock as you turn the knob. The pickup sounded fantastic. I didn't get to try all the models, but the pickup sounded fantastic. They had like this Firebird one that I really wanted to try, but I didn't try it for some reason. I don't remember why. But the amps were great. I got to get a Tone Master. It's funny. I know a guy who has two Tone Masters, and I thought he was crazy. I actually thought he was crazy. I thought, come on, two Tone Masters? That's ridiculous. But I got it once I played it. I went, oh, I get it. It's the type of guitar that when you play, you might not want to play anything else. You really might not want to play anything else. And that's interesting, right? That's when you go, well, other guitars sound good, they stay in tune, but what about a guitar that once I play it, I don't want to play any others? I don't want to play any other guitars. I just keep reaching for the same one, because that's the feeling I got. It's funny, you might take a step back and you might go, $500 guitar to a $5,000 guitar. There's no way that's worth it, right? Or come on, what are you really getting, right? Well, you know, a lot of it has to be labor cost. A lot of it has to be in doing business in the United States and shipping and the cost of that, of employing people, of health care, of everything. I know a bit about that. The cost of health care. Man, I remember 10 years ago what my company was paying for health care. And what it's paying now. You could buy a yacht. You could buy a yacht with what my with what the company pays in healthcare that I work for. Anyway, it's an interesting question to go like this. Reframe the thing. Don't compare a guitar, an expensive guitar, like a $5,000 guitar. Don't compare that, or $3,000 guitar. There's stuff cheaper than $5,000. Don't compare an expensive guitar to just a cheap guitar and go one for one, what's it worth? Because there's a thing that happens with really amazing guitars where you don't want to play other ones, right? Like I said, so imagine this. I think there's a lot of people who would fairly criticize a $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 guitar purely because that's a large number. But if you then go look, it's like, well, actually, you got two $1,200 instruments, and then you got this one over here that's like $700, and then you got this, all like a bunch of pedals you don't use, right? And it's like, actually, I look at your rig and I realize you've got like $5,000 to $7,000 in this rig, right? Like between your whole collection, you actually have that much money, right? And a lot of people go, well, okay, but it's not sunk in one guitar, and I can play this one and this one and this one. But what about when you discover an instrument that you go, yeah, I don't want to play another one? What about when you have, I mean, we see that. We see that in players who keep instruments a really long time, and they really form a bond with it. And I think they form a bond with it because to form a bond with a guitar, it has to have a soul. It's got to have something. And you got to like want to name it. I've talked about this before. Like I have my Goldie Strat and I name it Goldie. It's the first guitar I ever named because I'm romantic about it, because I went to that event and because Robin Ford was there, surprise, and because I won some free pickups and because I met the builder and because I asked questions and it sat in front of me and they explained to me that Fender is made many times in the same way they made guitars in the 50s in terms of how it's finished, the tools they use, the stamp presses, how the pickups are hand wired, blah, blah, blah. But when I play these Elliots, I gotta tell you something. I noticed that like the red one that E plays, it almost has a personality about it because it's red and it's bright and the way it sounded. And then the James Duke model, it sounded great. It sounded different. Not different, it sounded unique. I was surprised these gold foils had the type of fullness they did. They're guitars you could name. And what I mean by that is you could buy 10 $500 guitars and you'll have a JM and a 335 import, like a Sheraton, and you'll have a Strat or this or this. You could buy a $2,000 guitar and you'll go, I have this one with these pickups and this one at these pickups and I like them both for these reasons. Or here's my Strat and here's my this. But you might find that when you buy something really special, like I think these Elliots are, when you buy something really special like this, you might find that the guitar's got a bit of a soul. That it becomes something. See, you might find this, that the guitar, ooh, I like this analogy. Hear me on this. You might find that the guitar isn't just the stage with which you play chords and voicings. The guitar might not just be the stage for the music. The guitar might be another character in the play itself, lending its own influence, giving inspiration. The guitar might be a player in the play. It's really, really remarkable stuff that I saw there at the Elliott booth. Some of you are probably thinking, geez, HW, come on. You get a little sappy here. You know, how much has Elliott given you to say all this stuff? Nothing. I don't have a relationship with Elliott at all. Other than I know one guy, his name is E, and I don't think he works there. I mean, he has a guitar and he's sort of a prominent face, but he doesn't build the guitars. You know, I've seen him in some photo. I've seen him on their Instagram. He was at the booth at NAMM. I mean, he's kind of like an artist there. I guess. But I, you know, nobody's given me a guitar. Nobody's even let me borrow a guitar. I'm saying this because I really was blown away. And I wasn't the only one blown away. I was there with my buddy Bill. See, there's a guy named Bill who I'm in a Facebook group with, and we're all Kemper fans. And it's funny, is Bill brought a guitar. Bill had driven hours, and we had pizza and everything, and we had this kind of get together. And Bill brought some of his buddies and stuff, and we had a great time. And Bill went to NAMM with us, and Bill went there, tried the Elliots out too, and then owned one a week later. I will tell you this secret. This is by far the most expensive guitar I believe that Bill has had. And we even had a conversation where Bill was, if I remember correctly, Bill had said to me, well, that's a little much, when I mentioned another guitar brand that has prices in the same ballpark as Elliot, not more than Elliot, but oh, that's a little much. And then he showed me his, he had a Fender Telly that he had done a lot of work to and done stuff. And he said, for me, nothing gets better than this. And he had put his own pickups in and he had adjusted the setup. It was a great playing guitar. Now, I didn't plug it in. We actually played it in the parking lot of a pizza place because we had told Bill, please bring that guitar. We've seen it in clips and stuff and we want to try it out. But Bill brought it and Bill owned an Elliot a couple weeks later. After NAMM. So what does that mean? I've been eyeing some, but the thing is I want something very specific. I want a Tone Master with a trem, and I'm a little picky about the color. So I'm probably not going to find what I'm looking for on the used market, although it would be great to find it on the used market and maybe save a little dough and still get an awesome guitar. But alas, I don't think that will happen. Yeah, that's my watch telling me it's time to stand up. HW, you've been talking for too long. Are Elliot guitars worth it? You know, guys, I really think so. And I don't know that I can do justice in a podcast to really explain to you, other than the fit and finish was perfect. I thought there was a lot of class given to a lot of the sort of finishes and the choices. The amps sounded tremendous. Really, really tremendous. That Tremolux kind of style circuit was one of the best sounding amps I've heard in a long time. If I played amps live, I'd tell you that maybe I'd go get one of those. But you know, I'm pretty much taking the Kemper out live, and I kind of just prefer to put my money towards guitars at this point. That's just my personal choice. But there's been a lot of seasons in my life when that has not been the case. I've just bought and sold amps. Oh man, they were nice. As I prepared for this podcast, even I had sort of been had my mind so many places that I had, you know, I was like, oh, I like all my stable of guitars, and then I started looking at some of the footage from NAMM, and shoot, this is going to cost me some money. Yeah, I should delete this footage after because it's going to make me buy a guitar. There are worse things in life. There are worse things in life than buying really, really tremendous guitars. The amps were great, but they had a soul about them. They had a real soul about them. Is it all hype? No, it's really not. In fact, I actually feel like I don't feel like I've seen enough content out there about how special I thought these were. I'm going to right now, I haven't thought about this ahead of time. I'm going to try and think of a guitar company that I think I've had this type of reaction to their stuff. I really love Sur, but I love a lot of their lower price stuff. I often don't reach for the $4,000 and $5,000 Surs. I often am reaching for the $2,100, $2,200 Surs because to me, in terms of playability and what you get and tone, I just feel like those are go-to guitars. I can grab them, I can go play them, and they just sound great. And for the money, they're not. I don't feel like they're that much of a premium above Fender stuff, right? Brand new Fender American guitars aren't that much less than a Sur that costs $2,195. I feel like there, you're getting a deal. But they don't have this level of sort of they don't have this level of, I don't want to knock the Sir. It's perfect for what it is. But you know, you can tell, you can see the difference between a $4,000 Sir and a $2,000 Sir. And these Elliots are up there. They're premium. But they are beautiful. You know what I really respect too? I respect that they don't beat them up and they don't relic them. In a time when they could make some money doing that. That's it. There's integrity here. There's integrity here. And I don't know Andy personally. I mean, I talked to him literally for minutes at NAMM. But you can smell it. You can feel it. There's integrity. There's conviction about the builds. Hello? Hello? Really, really special stuff. I mean, really special stuff. So I don't know if this convinced someone to buy an Elliott. If it did convince you, put it in the comments because I'd like to know. I'd like to know so that I can say to Elliott, hey, this video helped someone buy one. So send me a free shirt when I buy my guitar. Because it's looking that way. It's looking like I'm going to have to get my hands on a Tone Master with a trim. I don't know what else to tell you. I think it's such a great time to be a guitar player. And I mean, there's few times when I think you find, you know, a boutique operation that just goes and's like, yeah, I could make an import model. Mm-hmm. We could like brand a whole bunch of pickups and sell them. We could do a lot of things. But it's not what I want to do because I love what I'm doing. And it's really, I have a lot of respect for it. See, here's what it is. A junkie recognizes another one. And where I'm obsessed with amps and guitars and pedals and all this stuff, I recognize when someone else is really obsessed. I've been HW. Thank you so much for listening. This has been episode 12. HW out.